Good morning. Thank you for coming to the presentation. Today we're going to be talking about essentially a greenhouse gas inventory from perennial grasslands in the Southern Plains. A little bit of a roadmap of where we're going to go today, background about the region, site description, then we'll do a little material and methods, no big deal. And then we'll get right into the meat of the presentation as far as results and discussion go. So the Southern Great Plains are essentially Oklahoma and Texas. We've got about 120 million acres in that area, 18 million of which are in Oklahoma specifically. I like to think of our pasture lands in two different ways. We've got the undisturbed native grasslands. These are very limited in management as far as chemical addition. They are grazed, however. And then just a general warm season mix of grasses. They can be burned. The sites that are presented here today are burned on a three-year cycle. And then the other way I like to think about them as improved pasture. These guys are moderately managed, to say, mainly with fertilizer. They're grazed and burned as well. And generally, they're old world blue stem in our region. So then, essentially with agricultural management practices, then we have to get into the talk of greenhouse gas and how do agricultural management practices affect greenhouse gases. Well, anything we do to the landscape, as we all know, can greatly alter soil carbon and nitrogen cycling. And after that, we have to think about, okay, how many times we graze, is that altering our greenhouse gases and our soil carbon and nitrogen cycling? Fertilizer addition has been noted to alter these as well, along with disturbance from machinery. We're not talking, obviously, in a pasture grassland system of tilling the soil, that type of thing. This disturbance that would be associated with machinery would be fertilizer machinery going across the landscape, potentially causing this disturbance. And then, obviously, as I've stated, we're interested in how those management practices are altering greenhouse gases, in particular carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. So agricultural practices produce 9% of the greenhouse gases that the U.S. Produces. This has increased by 11% since the 1990s, according to the EPA. Also, within agricultural greenhouse gas production, there's two major sources. There's livestock manure management systems in agriculture, so that would be legumes associated with dairy or feedlots. Also, there's agricultural soil management. That's what we're going to focus on today, and that's how these disturbances will play in. This, in particular, the agricultural soil management side of the greenhouse gases that have are associated with the total United States production of greenhouse gases have increased by 5% since 1990 as well. So, as we've discussed, there are specific disturbances that would be in the perennial grassland system of the Southern Plains. Mechanical, like we said, this is only in the improved pastures, and that would be the addition of the fertilizer with the machinery going across the landscape. Obviously, the input of fertilizer can greatly exacerbate greenhouse gases. Also, we have to think about the organic input as far as manure from cattle grazing on the landscape. The one abiotic factor that none of us in the room can control, and if we could, we would be amazing, would be the weather events associated, and those have a huge potential driving effect with greenhouse gas emissions. Obviously, animal grazing once again. However, these practices that we utilize or land managers utilize, depending if we understand the drivers of them a lot better, we can utilize the practices to still maximize yield and efficiency by utilizing slow-release fertilizers instead of quick-release fertilizers, reducing potential greenhouse gases. There's research indicating that utilizing polyculture actually will promote mitigation of greenhouse gases, as well as making sure that we're not transitioning pasture land to cropland currently, because that is a major disturbance and can release a lot of carbon and nitrogen to the atmosphere. So if we promote continuing to manage perennial grasslands efficiently, we hopefully will be able to mitigate some of the greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere. So Southern Plains, the region of interest, has these two particular systems, native and improved. Application of fertilizer only, like I said, is in the improved pasture. That's to maximize, obviously, yield. We do have animal grazing in both systems. We utilize native and improved pasture as a forage source for our cattle. We also, in the region, have been experiencing extreme drought, followed by really ephemeral rainfall, and it has actually increased. So it would be interesting to determine the effect of greenhouse gases given these abiotic factors. And then in the region, there hasn't been an inventory of native versus improved as far as greenhouse gases go in the Southern Plains and what drives them. So that is our main objective, monitor the seasonal trends within native and improved grasslands for greenhouse gases. So site description, we have the two native and improved pastures. These sites are located at a USDA ARS facility called Grazing Lands Research Laboratory in El Reno, Oklahoma. As stated before, our native is tall grass prairie, essentially, polyculture, unmanaged, grazed. Old World Bluestem is the improved pasture. Thank you. It is minimally managed fertilizer application once a year. It's grazed and burned. These two sites are actually burned at the same time. The data that's presented today is not, it's in the middle of a burn cycle, so we don't have to worry about burning at this juncture. And the Old World Bluestem has been in Old World Bluestem for at least 10 years. The data presented today is just from the year 2015. Sampling is bi-weekly through the major growing season, February to October, and then monthly, November through January. So the sites from this table you can see are very similar as far as physical properties go, which is wonderful for comparison purposes. And from here on out, TGP is our native, and then OWB is our improved pasture. So sampling, we did take soil analysis concurrently with greenhouse gas emissions. It was 0 to 15 centimeters for gravimetric soil water content. And then at the beginning of the growing season and post-growing season, we did take measurements for the physical properties. Greenhouse gas analysis, I'm old school. I do everything with stationary chambers, no automation. Sampled on a 45-minute cycle. And the headspace gases are analyzed on a gas chromatograph for nitrous oxide, CO2, and methane. Very simple statistics, looking at water filled pore space and greenhouse gas variability. That was all done on a randomized design. Normality was looked at for QQ plots, and outliers were assessed using Koch's distance, and then mixed model procedures and R were utilized to compare time frames and plots. So water-filled pore space in 2015, you can see pretty much similar throughout the whole year within the two systems, however different in February, July, and September. In general, during these times, the native system held more water than the improved system. Keep that in mind. Carbon dioxide emissions didn't follow a specific pattern between the two treatments. Essentially, they were similar until April of 2015. However, the improved pasture increased in emissions by 18 milligrams per meter squared per hour in comparison to the 40 milligrams per meter squared per hour that the native prairie produced. This observation essentially could be due to a lot of different things. Further investigation will have to occur to determine exactly the specific driver. However, this could be due to microbial mineralization of stored soil carbon, or more root respiration or microbial respiration in the old world bluestem. Nitrous oxide emissions, similar, no specific pattern between the two treatments. However, in general, the improved pasture had greater nitrous oxide emissions than the native pasture. And this could essentially be due to the application of fertilizer. Also, we did see a massive decrease in March in the native prairie, probably due to biomass production and the ramping up essentially of that biomass production associated with warm season grasses. Then there was a flux that you see in July in both systems. Back to that comment I made earlier about the abiotic factors, in particular climatic variables. July in 2015 was very interesting in the Southern Plains. We got a massive amount of rain, which greatly altered our greenhouse gases in that sense. We got 17 inches of rain in a matter of 2 weeks, which after being in a drought and then getting that amount of rain, it obviously greatly affected our greenhouse gas emissions and cycling in the soil. Methane emissions are crazy as always. Of these two pasture systems, they had a net assimilation, both pastures did. However, the greater assimilation occurred in the native pasture. And this is interesting actually because even though the water-filled pore space in both systems were very similar throughout the whole growing season, we saw this major assimilation occur in Tallgrass Prairie. The native pasture. It was a magnitude of 8, essentially, and further investigation will have to occur specifically into the microbial dynamics, but it could be due potentially to the polyculture effect of the native prairie opposed to the monoculture associated with the improved pasture, just being diversity increasing efficiency potentially. Then there's also a frame of thought that could potentially be that the ammonium addition in fertilizer to old world bluestem could have altered the methane dynamics as well. So what did we learn from a season of monitoring greenhouse gases? Improved pastures, they're a net emitter of carbon and nitrogen. Native pastures, as we would suspect, they emit less, and this could be potentially due to rapid mineralization and immobilization of nutrients. Methane assimilation in a grassland pasture system is an important ecosystem service and something we have to keep in mind in this region. Then we also have to realize that we have limited time, and we have to only show certain things here. So there's going to be further monitoring, obviously, in this project, along with further data associated with the soil, carbon, and nitrogen taken at the same time. I'd like to thank my colleagues, Lauren Hanna and Jackie McCaslin, for their field assistance and expertise, as well as my funding agencies. There's my contact information. If we have time, we can take questions. Thank you.